Your name?
Your name.
Schmucks. Pledge allegiance.
Pledge allegiance.
To Hedley Lamarr.
To Hedley Lamarr.
That's Hedley.
That's Hedley.
And to the evil.
And to the evil.
For which he stands.
For which he stands.
Now go do that voodoo that you do so well.
Welcome to the Pinstripe LA Podcast, where the Yankees have started off the second half of the 2014 season in pretty great style. They won 6 out of 7 games, swept the Reds, took 3 out of 4 from the Rangers. Neither team is very impressive right now, but, you know, the Yankees did their job, and they finally won some games at Yankee Stadium, where they've been under 500. We're in pretty good spirits. I'm here with Matt Ferencik and Matt Provenzano. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Good, except
Yankees are doing good.
Other than your computer.
Hashtag analysis. Yeah. Well, not going to work anymore.
We were done recording the Pinstripe LA Podcast, and then about half an hour later, we see coming across Twitter, Jim Bowden. Yankees could be interested in Ian Kennedy, but at the hefty price of Ian Clarkin and Eric Jagielo. Which would just be a terrible trade.
Yeah.
Pretty bad one.
Yep. I don't think we can rule out that Jim Bowden's just, like, looking at random players and just be like, yeah, Yankees gonna be interested in them.
Like, he asked the Padres, like, what did you give Ian Kennedy for? And they'd say, like, a vastly overrated price, and the Yankees are like, then he reports that, and, like, payment goes to the Yankees, and they're like, no.
I hope that was the extent of their trade talk. At least, I mean, fortunately, like, 5 minutes later, John Heyman was like, the Yankees are interested in Kennedy, but not at the price of both Jagielo and Clarkin. So, that was good to see, because I was freaking out for a moment.
Yeah, I mean, if the Yankees were the Padres, they'd make that trade.
Oh, absolutely. It wouldn't surprise me if, like, Omar Minaya is like, you know what? It's like, yeah, you'll give you Ian Kennedy. You'll give us Clarkin and Jagielo. How does that sound? And then I hope, like, dial tone was after that.
Probably.
Well, it's funny. We were talking about the Fred McGriff trade early in the podcast, and when I first saw that tweet, I had, like, flat, like, I don't want to speak it, not flashbacks, but, like, oh, God. Like, no.
We're talking about, like, Steinbrenner moves. That would be a Steinbrenner move. Let's get Ian Kennedy, who was literally traded for, like, a relief prospect last year, and give up 2 of the top 5 prospects for him. No.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
I'm lost.
Yeah, it's definitely not real.
No. And I want no part of Jorge De La Rosa either.
Nope.
And considering...
Would not endorse.
Considering the Rockies asked the Orioles for Kevin Gausman in exchange for Jorge De La Rosa, they're off their gourd. So... I definitely think Bowden is just, like... He's had, like, I don't know, 5 shots of absinthe, and he's just spouting off random shit.
Yeah, I don't see any of that actually.
I told... So Purple Row, the Rockies FBN blog, tweeted about it, and I said, I will send you a pack of Double Bubble that I found in my back pocket for De La Rosa. And one of their people replied that, you laugh, but Double Bubble would be our second best bullpen option. Yeah, this, oh my god. So, yeah, I don't think we have to go in depth on this, but, I mean... It would just be a terrible deal. I would feel awkward enough dealing just one of Jagielo or Clarkin for Ian Kennedy, just because I don't really have that much faith in Kennedy.
Well, one of them, I think would be I would say a fair trade, just because it's debatable.
Yeah, I would at least deal with
debate either way. Because the thing is, there are a lot of questions about Jagielo, whether he's going to take a third, and like, whether he's even going to be a big league regular. And But both of them, No.
Yeah, one of them I would be upset, but I'd get over it quick.
Right, right. It'd just be like, well, you know, that you'd control him for a year and a half, and maybe he's really turned a corner. So, I guess you could live with giving up one of them. Preferably it would just be Jigailo as opposed to just Clarkin. Even though I do happen to like Jigailo a little bit more than Clarkin, but I understand why some people think he's why Clarkin's a better prospect. And even though, like, I don't know, there are similarities with Clarkin and Kennedy that go beyond the fact that they seemed like they were both pretty well polished amateur pitchers. Except the difference is that Ian Clarkin was drafted out of like a prep school, and Ian Kennedy was drafted out of college. But I think Ian Clarkin could very well just be a younger version of Kennedy. So.
Possibly.
But, man, I think we've made it clear that, yeah, both of these guys going in one deal, Ian Perkins Kennedy, is just madness. I think,
yes, it'd be very,
I think Tanya might shut down crazy. The site.
Become like a cricket blog or something.
Yep. Like, yeah, we've given up.
Would you like post like recipes instead? Forget about baseball. Yeah. Cooking blog.
It's like, well, we used to be Yankees blog. Then they traded two really good prospects for Ian Kennedy. And yeah. We're done here.
For a year and a half, Ian Kennedy.
I like Greg's idea. He said that the Padres should just give Ian Kennedy as a farewell tour gift. They just wrap him in a box and send him to New York.
Instead of a birthday cake. Yep.
I think maybe this is just like Omar Minaya realized what a bad trade he made to get with Chase Headley, and he's like, how can I save face? I know. Hey, Cash, how about Clarkin and Jigailo for Kennedy? Oh my god. So, I think that's enough. You guys have anything more to add about it?
Nope, just no. Don't do drugs.
Yeah. Just no is about an accurate assessment.
Yes. You have the right to say no. So, none of this, Cashman. Thanks. So, obviously, the big news, Yankees finally got an actual third baseman, Chase Headley. Brian Cashman pulled off another ninja-type move by getting a half season of Headley in exchange for Yanhervis Solarte and Rafael DePaula. So,
yes.
Yeah.
and the Yankees got Cash, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
Yeah. It's just been very important that Cashman has been able to finagle good things out of Solarte. And
Watch. I think what someone said was really funny. Makes a lot of sense. So, if the Yankees had done a trade for Rafael DePaulo and Yanhervis Solarte for cash considerations, would you shrug your shoulder?
I mean, it would have been a little weird.
It would be weird, but would you be, like, upset?
Not really. I would just...
Yeah.
But,
So, you could reasonably see the Yankees trading with one of those for cash considerations, and no one would really be bothered by that. Yet, they're trading that, and they're getting a Major League third baseman.
Fine with me.
Fire Cashman.
Yeah, fire him.
He's giving up the future. Yanhervis Solarte was supposed to be the leading force for a long, long time. But you remember some people were plugging him into the 2016 lineup?
Yeah, he's going to be the next captain.
Giving away the future.
Yanhervis is the leader of the new core four.
Along with Jim Miller.
Wade LeBlanc. And Bruce Billings. No, Bruce Billings was DFA, correct?
Also Wade LeBlanc, he's also gone.
Yeah. Well, I find that whole narrative kind of funny about, like, building for the future, because, like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, very vague, and it's just like, oh, they're not looking at the future. It's like, well, I mean, some of these players aren't part of the future, really, or they're, in the case of DePaula, they're probably just a guy who's going to turn into a reliever, so you can afford to part with them to improve the current
team. Yeah. I just think the idea of a future in baseball doesn't exist.
Like, you can try and develop, and obviously making a farm system with good prospects is very smart, and you need to have guys to, like, be cheap young talent, but you could have the best farm system in the world, and you could end up with nothing.
I kind of think that that type of ideology of building a farm system and creating, like, a core four or a future is kind of akin to, like, people who think that, like, science fiction is going to turn to reality.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, I could easily project forward and say that we're going to flying cars because, yes, we technically have the mental capacity and the technology, but, like, it probably isn't going to pan out exactly as you think it's going to pan out. So I find that kind of just funny because, like, even teams who have the best farm systems in baseball don't technically have that quote-unquote future that these fans keep talking about.
Yeah, like, there's this idea that, oh, we need to get the next core four. It's like, well, that just doesn't... The Yankees turned out, like... two Hall of Famers and two more players that have pretty decent cases for the Hall of Fame. And they were teammates for like 16, 17 years. That just doesn't happen.
Nope, it's probably never going to happen again. Yep.
But either way, I mean, the point of the trade was to improve the 2014 team, and they're definitely improved with Chase Headley at third base. I know Headley has had a shaky first half with the Padres and wasn't nearly as good as he was in 2012 and 2013 with the Padres, but he's still a guy who is a very good defender at third base and a very strong candidate, kind of like Brandon McCarthy, to bounce back with better numbers since he is not that bad of a player.
No.
Yeah.
And he has a track record, too, I think is the biggest thing. It's not like he's 36 with a track record. He's 30 with a track. He just turned 30 with a track record. So, like, you can easily have an idea of what his talent level is by extrapolating from what he's done.
Right.
It's not like Yenhervis Solarte, where he spends, you know, 7 years toiling in the minors, and we kind of just have to figure out what he is. It's like, I think we have a general idea of who Chase Headley is. Like, you know, obviously there's a little guesswork because you have the 2012 season that kind of throws everything off, and then you have the injuries, but, like, there's a general talent level underneath all of that that I think we can kind of figure out what it is, and it's definitely better than what they had, for sure.
Yep. I mean, the other options at third base were, like, more Solarte or Zalas Wheeler, or defensive stylings of Kelly Johnson.
Yeah, so it's pretty awesome. I think it's pretty awesome to have a Chase Headley at third base.
Yeah. If only they could do something Brian Roberts problem.
Yes, that is a problem that needs to end. I feel like the Brian Roberts problem is one of those things that in, like, 5 years, like, I'm going to laugh hysterically about that. Like, Brian Roberts was the starting second baseman for the New York Yankees for a very long time. Like, too much longer than he should have been.
It'll be like a modified, like, Alberto Gonzalez. Like, someone you know be like, oh, man, that played on the team.
Yep. It's kind of going to be like when Wilson Bedemy was the second baseman for, like, way too long.
Would be nice if Rob Refsnyder was at least considered an option, but unfortunately Brian Cashman's comments this week did not make it seem like he was going to be considered for anything this year other than maybe, like, something like a September call-up. But apparently he needs a lot of work on defense. I don't know.
Yeah.
I trust their internal defensive metrics, but... I don't know.
So, I was actually, as you saw on that particular post, I was very pissed off at first, but then I actually spent a little time digging around, and I was just curious, like, what would factor into that decision as to why you wouldn't call him up? So I looked at, I factored in the fact his defense is probably not good, and then I looked up what his projected batting line would be. So if you go by Pecota projections, he would have an OPS of 665 as a median level of performance.
So I wonder if those Pecota projections are made before the city that haven't been updated since he's a better player now.
Alright, so yeah, you can also use so then I also did Steamer, which is updated.
Yeah.
So Steamer had a little bit of a better one, but it was still kind of similar. It basically said he would have in next year, so 2015, he would have an OPS of 695. Mm-hmm. Which is good for 93 WRC+. And that projection also accounts for the fact that the defense would be about league average. So, if you think about it, 93 WRC+ and bad defense is worse than Brian Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only thing I could probably, is like their internal metrics obviously are taking whatever Scranton's stats are and trying to convert it to major league performance. I'm sure they do that.
Yeah, and they have a good comprehension of like how far along he is defensively at second base.
So they're probably saying like the amount of runs above average he's creating offensively minus the amount of runs above average defensively is really bad. So I'm going to say that he's about a league average hitter with bad defense. And I think that's kind of where he stands. So at first I was very angry, but I think it's just because those numbers are kind of inflated. If you think about all the other prospects who've hit well in AAA, like you could find plenty of them that hit well in AAA and just did terribly in major leagues.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, he's been hitting well for a while now, but let's go back. Let's do another example. Let's go back to our friend David Adams. David Adams in 2013 had about a 121 WRC plus in AAA in 255 plate appearances. And the year prior, in 383 plate appearances, he had a WRC plus of 133. And his defense, mind you, was decent. Like, he wasn't a terrible defender. And that converted to 45 WRC plus in major leagues. So, I mean, granted, he has no power. But the thing is, Ref Snyder doesn't either. So
yeah,
my question would be... So my question is they're obviously seeing something where, like, if we think about all these guys who hit well in AAA and even AA, maybe Ref Snyder really isn't that good. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. It just seems frustrating considering what they're not getting from Brian Roberts.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, they shouldn't really be concerned about service time because it's already passed, way past Super 2. So, I mean, giving him a shot wouldn't really hurt anything, but I guess they feel it would hurt his development process.
Yeah,
because if he's just sitting on a league roster and he's not actually learning anything, that's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. That's just the way I try to see it a little more level-headed than I would reactionarily. I would be like, oh, I'm so pissed just because I'm frustrated with Brian Roberts. But there's always the possibility that he's could be much worse.
Yeah, Billy, just really, it's just that like the status quo isn't really cutting it. So it
true.
To be like,
I agree with you.
And I remember in 2005, Robinson Cano was really bad defensively. And he managed to make it work. So, I think that if the Yankees did want to try Ref Snyder second in the majors, they would live, I think. And it's not like they don't have infield code in majors, too. Infield instructors then were really crucial in Robinson Cano's development. So I think they can make something work.
But I think if I'm going to go back, but I would assume that his minor league numbers were a shade different than Ref Snyder's.
Well, see, the thing is, like, Cano was only at AAA for, I think, like, half a season in 2004, and then for a month in 2005, and he was killing it. So, I don't know.
Well, he was killing it in 2005, not in 2004. In 2004, in 240 plate appearances, he had an OPS of 719.
Yeah, he was only, like, okay.
Yeah, and then in 2005, he had an OPS of 942, and that's when they decided to bring him up.
And I think the contrast between, like, him and Tony Womack was a lot greater than Brian Roberts and Ref Snyder.
Yeah, like, Tony Womack was very, very bad. Brian Roberts is slightly above replacement level.
Yeah, it's just a weird little, like, limbo they have going on. But it does make her, like, how much are they going to trust him next year? What is he even going to be an option next year?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because they could either decide to try to shoot for him at second base, like out of camp, or they could try to sign somebody. Personally, I think they're going to try to like work with him out of camp because there are so many other holes. He's the only one with like a legitimate internal option. That's the only position with a legitimate internal option.
Of course, the other fear is that they just bring back Ryan Roberts too.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yes, I'm very afraid of that happening.
Maybe some bad GM will come to the rescue.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I mean...
Brain training battle between Roberts and Ref Snyder.
Oh, man. That would be, like, rigged before the start.
As much as I want to get excited about Ref Snyder, I just want to keep the expectations level.
Sure. I don't think anyone's expecting him to come up and play exactly like, you know, Robinson Cano did in 2005. It's just that's an option.
Yeah. So, I mean, the projection systems say that if he were to hit as he does, and, like, the hitting projections are usually okay, assuming a league average defense, which is a huge assumption, he would be at about a 1.5 WAR player over 600 plate appearances, which would be a huge, which would be a big improvement over Brian Roberts. But again, that's assuming league average defense.
Right. I mean, I don't even think that Brian Roberts even has league average defense. So.
He doesn't.
I mean, it's probably better than Ripsnyder, but I don't know. Obviously, we have no way of really knowing for sure, like, how much better. But
yeah, right now Brian Roberts' OPS is like 680.
I'm so still amazed he had like three homers or whatever.
two of them were like huge.
Yeah.
So
there's the one, the go-ahead one, and the one that tied against the Rays.
Yeah.
Yep.
That one in Anaheim is just like, oh my god, Brian Roberts homered? How is this a real thing?
Yeah, but the one against the Rays was horrible because it just delayed the inevitable of losing the game. Hmm. Well, anyway, I mean, I'm excited to see what Rob Refsner can do, but it's more like I wouldn't be surprised if he was,
probably. But I think it's a lot of frustration just with what's going on there right now, and there doesn't really seem to be a solution.
Especially considering how shrewd Cashman's been everywhere else, like, in recently. Like, he's done so well getting McCarthy and getting Headley and, like, squeezing everything he could out of Nuno and Solarte for what they were worth, and that's why it's very strange. But I guess I also have to say they probably have a general idea of what they're doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
It was also just a little weird to see them in public just be like, we don't think he's ready. I don't know if, like, it might have just been, like, something said to reporters. Because, you know, people say stuff all the time in baseball. It doesn't mean anything. But even if it did, like, have some, like, even if it was just a guy's, it might be kind of weird to hear from, like, Refsnyder's point of view. It's like, well, I don't know. Maybe he was just tired of getting questions from Andrew Marchand about it.
Possibly, because, like, everyone's like, when are you going to call him up? When are you going to call him up? When are you going to call him up? And I guess it's kind of just like, cool your jets. Because the thing is, there's no way you could see defense, like, in the box score.
At least Refsnyder gets to spend more time in Sonny Scranton.
Yeah.
How is Scranton doing?
It's not bad. There's a nice day.
I saw some mascot other than Quills is in the mascot contest. What is that about?
Yes. Champ, I don't know. He's not as good. I don't know why they're bothering.
Seriously. Well, eventually maybe we'll see Refsnyder, or at least someone better than Brian Roberts at second base. But for now, it looks like...
Maybe it's Quills.
Maybe it'll be Quills. Maybe it'll be the Sega Genesis. Maybe it'll be a fax machine or a pager.
A lamp.
Yes. Or just a poster of Robinson Cano.
Yes, I'd like that.
Robinson Cano bobblehead. I just put it out there.
So did you see Robinson Cano's first complaint about Safeco Field?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's like, welcome now to Seattle.
He was upset that he wasn't getting as many home runs. And surprise.
Yeah, that really can't surprise. I mean, Adrian Beltre hit like 49 homers for the Dodgers, and then he signed it with the Mariners 4 years and basically didn't homer at all.
Yeah, and Beltre has like almost 400 home runs.
Yeah, and Cano is still doing really well. It's just no power because they'd go.
Yeah, but it's all like adjusted, so.
Yeah. Oh, well. Another problem that is one of the reasons that we were talking about Roberts and Refsnyder so much is that right now the Yankees are playing with a very weak bench. Because Mark Teixeira has been out for a few days with, like, a lat strain, and he hasn't needed to be DL'd yet. They still might, but they don't know for sure. Either way, he hasn't been able to play. And then Kelly Johnson got hurt. He strained a groin running to make a catch in the long game that was against the Rangers the other day, and because the bullpen was so killed in that game, they called up Chris LaRue to take his spot just so they had a fresh arm. But now they're playing. They played today and the day before with just, like, basically two bench players. And that's Brendan Ryan, who started today and gave Derek Jeter a rest. And Zealous Wheeler. That's it. That's the bench.
Yes, that is. That is the bench.
So you gotta wonder how long that's gonna continue, because you can't keep doing that. And you can't keep playing Ichiro every day, because we've seen how badly that works out. His numbers are now almost as bad as they were last year.
Yep.
And
I think it's gonna come. Yeah. I think it's gonna come down to whether Brian Cashman goes after another bat.
Yeah.
Maybe someone like a John Mayberry type character.
Maybe
that would probably be their bet, and then Ichiro could kind of be stored in to the fourth outfielder role officially once again, and then Zealous Wheeler can kind of just fill whatever's open, and then you always have Cervelli and McCann to do the first base catching duty, because they've been okay with having Cervelli catch and McCann at first base.
Yeah, they've been okay, but I think they would prefer to have like a guy who can. They don't have to rely on one of their catchers as their backup first base option. So I imagine they might want to call someone up who can play a little bit of first base or something. Maybe they're just doing this as a stall until Scott Sizemore comes back to Scranton. Then they could just call him up since he can play around the infield. But
possibly.
I don't even know. Here's another scenario where like a guy like Jose Perella might be a little interesting. I'm not really a big Perella fan, but he's not good on defense at all. But he's played a little bit of first base. He's played infield. He's played outfield. He's kind of like a Zealous Wheeler with a weaker glove in that sense. And he's been hitting the tar out of the ball in Scranton. So maybe you give him a shot, even though, like, as I mentioned, I'm not really big on him. But, you know, maybe he pulls out a couple good weeks like Solarte did.
Yeah. It's possible. I mean, I really don't have much confidence in Jose Perella. I think he's a Zealous Wheeler type of player.
Yep.
I mean, like, his numbers for AAA are really underwhelming. Really underwhelming. So
Perella?
If he's... Yeah. I don't think they're that great. If he's got bad defense, too.
He's at 309, 351, 436 with a 116 WRC plus, so it's pretty good. But obviously, you don't know how that would like translate to a major league level. But it would be something that I'd at least be curious to see how he would see if you could catch fire. You try to catch lightning in a bottle like you did with Solarte for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean that's totally possible. But like whatever it is, it can't be a long term solution.
Oh no, not at all. It's just something to be a Band-Aid while they try to get their players healthy again. I mean, it seems to be like swimming against the tide, trying to get a healthy bench out there. But
yeah, and they have I think they said they were going to decide what they were going to do with Mark Teixeira soon. So they're gonna have to decide pretty quickly whenever that happens. And they also have about a week to decide what they want to do with the trade deadline. Do they want to go with someone who's going to be a first base right fielder type? Or just a strictly outfielder type, or I don't know or a pitcher.
I know Cashman did say that if he were given a choice, he would probably prefer a hitter to a pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I just don't know where he's going to get one.
Yeah, maybe he'll pull out something crazy like he did with the Nuno and the Solarte deals.
Turns Austin Romine into, like, Kershaw.
Yes, if he doesn't do that, then you know. Bust.
Fire him.
It would have to be someone in the same mold who's having a really underwhelming year, but profiles well, that they could kind of flip. I honestly don't know who that would be, but that's probably who they would target.
Yeah, there might be like another underwhelming outfield type out there who maybe can do a little bit, but who knows? Maybe it's someone even as like kind of whatever as a Marlon Byrd. Maybe if you get the Ruben Amaro to finally admit, oh, maybe I should sell, then you can get Marlon Byrd, and that wouldn't be too bad. His contract isn't that much.
Yeah, his contract is
like 2 years.
2 years, $16 million with an option year, and the option is a vesting option if he gets 1,100 plate appearances in 14 and 15 with at least 550 plate appearances in 2015 or 600 plate appearances in 2015. If it doesn't vest, it becomes a club option. So
I would imagine that I don't think he's going to get that many plate appearances, to be honest.
I think the only way he'd get that many is if he's good enough to get that many, and I don't know that he is.
Yeah. I mean, the only problem I see with that deal, with a possible more, is the fact that his defense is really bad.
Oh, yeah. He's not good.
You'd want him to play DH, but Beltran is, like, the de facto DH now.
Yeah. And I guess he can try to... Right field in Yankee Stadium, the Yankees can get away with kind of shaky defense there sometimes just because they have such good outfield defense in left and center, and right field is kind of shallow anyway. So,
yeah,
they could probably get away with it, but I don't know. It's hard to really, like, determining, like, these trade targets. It can be a challenge because you just don't know who's actually for sale, and you don't know what these teams are particularly looking for. So,
yep.
We'll see. They could solve the problem by just some very quiet option. Maybe they'll just call up Zoilo for all I know. But maybe they'll do something. But as we mentioned, one of the pluses of the trades recently has been Brandon McCarthy, who's pitched really well in his first three starts as a Yankee. And he's even getting strikeouts, which isn't a pleasant surprise because he wasn't really supposed to be getting strikeouts, but he's doing that anyway, and he's pitched very well in all three of the starts.
Yeah, he's been good for like a month now, quietly.
Well, see, now he has the will to win.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. How is he free ahead?
Pinstripes made him into a better player.
The pride and power in pinstripes.
So since I went back about a month, and this doesn't include today's game, but even if you do, it gets better. So since June 21st, which is about a month ago, he's had 30 innings. He's had 27 strikeouts and 4 walks. And a 2.97 ERA. And that doesn't even include today's outing, which is obviously would make it presumably better.
Yeah.
So he's been pitching well for about a month. Yeah.
And, like, it seems... We've seen that occasionally he'll give up the solo dinger, but, like, that's not really a problem if you're able to keep the guys off base for that. And, you know, he's a ground ball pitcher, so sometimes you're not going to be able to avoid that, but he seems to be okay despite it. So.
Yeah, and he also doesn't walk that many people, so that helps.
Yeah, he just hope they can keep it up, because he's...
That is the key.
He's providing very welcome stability.
Well, I have more faith in him keeping this up than I do in Vidal Nuño.
Oh, yes, definitely. And that was, like, the big crux of it. It's just, like, we need to make a move to get Vidal Nuño out of here as someone much more reliable. And...
I would just like to mention that the amount of F-war that Brandon McCarthy has produced in his tenure with the Yankees is greater than Vidal Nuño's career F4.
That's about right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's only in, like two... Is that only in the two starts, or does it include today, too?
It may include the third. I'll check. It includes two starts, so I'm sure it'll go up.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, obviously, you're working with small sample size, but, you know, it's still a funny little thing.
It's a funny little thing that Vidal Nuño has been bad for about 115 innings now.
Yeah, he's just not a good pitcher, and somehow Arizona's like, yes, give us him and we will give you money in addition to Brandon McCarthy. That's GMing. But it's been great having McCarthy in the rotation pitching well, because it was really hard to envision the Yankees' rotation not crumbling to the ground without Tanaka. And, you know, they still very well might. Just because there are so many, like, gambles in that rotation right now. But...
Yep.
And the news, Tanaka, today, that he's still feeling a little bit of discomfort is not really promising. So, who knows if we'll even get to see Tanaka back. Who knows if we'll even get to see Pineda back, since he's such a mystery. He's on a rehab program.
Yeah.
He was on a rehab program before, and that didn't go anywhere, so...
I mean... Yeah, it's gonna be really interesting, but you have to credit Brian Cashman for actually having the depth to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've been impressive that they've been able to. Right now, the rotation is Brandon McCarthy, Hiroki Kuroda, David Phelps, Shane Green, and Chase Whitley. And of all of those, the only one that I really don't have any confidence in is Chase Whitley. The other guy, yeah, I can at least...
Yeah.
I'm kind of cautionary, obviously, because I know we've seen Hirooki Kuroda fade in the second half before just because he's on the older side. And we know that, you know, Shane Green's a rookie. David Phelps has never really started for a full season before. So you're not really sure what you're getting, but they're making it work somehow.
Yeah, and if someone had told me that that's what the rotation would look like at the beginning of the season, I would probably say they'd be about five games under 500.
Mm-hmm.
I like to be to be conservative.
Yeah, that was, and that's probably like what your guess would be, assuming that they were getting expected production from like Carlos Beltran and Brian McCann, which they haven't gotten so far.
Yeah,
but even with an offense that struggled, they're hanging in there, and who knows how long the pitching rotation can keep it going like that. But it's been very impressive to see these no names that, like, 4/5 of the starting of the opening day rotation are gone, and they're in the mean. It's as I keep saying that it's just for now, but it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, and what's good is that their bullpen is really, like, it's almost like the equivalent of having an ace starter in your rotation.
Yeah. And
like between Betances, Warren, and Robertson, it's like, all right.
And Kelly's getting better, too.
Yeah.
And Kelly's getting better. So between the three of them, it's like having, like, an excellent, excellent starter in your rotation.
Right. Yeah, the Yankees are just very privileged right now to have both Betances and Robertson, who were two of the best relievers in baseball, both in the bullpen at the same time. And they're able to pick up the slack when, you know, some of these starters are, they're not that experienced like a Shane Green or a David Phelps. So, or a Chase Whitley for that matter. So you're able to put these guys in a bit earlier than maybe the Yankees would have used to, but they're holding it. And I was, even though the Rangers don't have a great offense, I was kind of stunned that they were held scoreless for 13 innings in that one game.
Yeah.
And you even had guys like, I think David Huff had a scoreless inning in there.
Yeah, Jeff Francis.
Jeff Francis got the win with a scoreless inning.
Yeah, I think that for a team that, I don't know if they would get to, I personally think they're either going to win the division or just not make the playoffs, but if they were to go to a wild card game, I would have loved to have Tanaka pitch in that game, but if they didn't, they'd be able to hand that over to the bullpen pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, having Betances for two innings, you could easily have Betances for two innings and Warren for two innings.
Mm-hmm.
And having Robertson for two innings and having Kelly for an inning. Like, what's really great about having that bullpen is that if they do happen to go to a wild card game, they could essentially hand it over to the bullpen at the first sign of trouble.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they would do it that quickly.
No, but it gives them a lot. It gives them more options than if they have a terrible bullpen and they're kind of stuck.
Right, and it also depends on, like, it, you know, depending on that second wild card thing. If that is what happens, then how many relievers you have to burn in those last few games just to get to that point. But obviously, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I would love for the Yankees to stay in contention deep into September.
Would be nice.
I mean, they didn't really do that last year. They somehow got back to the point where they were within a game of the second wild card spot, and then everything just fell apart. But
yeah, they were in into the last, like, I think like 2 or 3 weeks.
I think they'll pretty much scoped out all the main Yankees points from the past week. They got a big series coming up this weekend against the Blue Jays. It's really funny to say that because, you know, I think a lot of people underestimated the Blue Jays heading into the season, including us. And they've had the great start. They fell back a little bit, but they're still right in the heat of the AL East race. And I think they just swept the Red Sox, right?
I think they did.
So
Marcus Stroman was like throwing like a no hitter.
Yeah, he only allowed like one hit in 7 innings or something like that.
Yep. So Red Sox gonna Red Sox.
If the Red Sox could keep falling apart, that would be great. I don't want to have to worry about them.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Would also like if the Rays reverted to their April and May form.
Yes, that'd
be nice.
That
would also work for me.
Yeah, this weekend, so the Yankees are playing the Blue Jays in Yankee Stadium. Friday night, they'll send Kuroda against Mark Burley, and Saturday, Shane Green against Drew Hutchison. And then on Sunday, tentatively, it's J.A. Happ against Chase Whitley, which is just not a very impressive pitching matchup.
No.
But, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of offense in this series. And the Yankees' offense is, you're going to have their work cut out for them keeping up, because the Blue Jays just have a terrific offense.
Yup.
But maybe Kuroda can pitch well again. Shane Green can replicate, you know, one of those really good starts against the Indians. And even Whitley threw six scoreless innings very quietly in his last game. Granted, that was against the Rangers team that had an awful bottom of the lineup, but, you know.
But he also got shelled by the Blue Jays, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe he did, yes. But, yes.
So, there's that.
It's a big series. And then, after that, they'll play the Rangers in Texas, so gotta go back to beating them up. So, they have to face Darvish again, and they probably won't luck out with only having to face him for five innings this time.
Yeah.
Chase Whitley's face on the Yankees website is not... I don't know. It's kind of, his eyes are a little weird. I don't know.
Yeah, it's. I thought the funniest picture was the picture they used for Chase. When I was at Yankee Stadium, they had the picture for Chase Headley, and it was obviously not professionally done. It looks like they just like caught him like in the clubhouse. Like, hold on a second, I need to take your picture.
It has like a picture that someone took on like their iPhone.
It's a selfie, actually.
Yes. It's just like the video board operator with Chase Headley. How about a Chase Headley selfie?
Well, there was that Chase Headley Twitter account that turned out to be fake, but right after he got traded, it changed its picture to like a Photoshop Chase Headley Yankees baseball card. But he still the beard on the picture.
Well, the thing is, like, the MLB Twitter account like posts those after players get traded. It's like, good work, guys. It's almost as good as the ASOC.
Yeah, your Photoshop. You could just wait, like, a day.
No. Probably because they get retweeted like crazy, so it's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, regardless, big series coming up this weekend against the Blue Jays, so hopefully the Yankees take care of business. But now we're going to move on to the baseball reference segment that Matt F. put together. So what have you been looking up this week, Matt F.?
What I looked up this week was I found the Yankees relievers with the longest streak of a negative win percentage added, a.k.a. Kane Mopp. And the lucky winner of this award is Pat Clements, who in 1987 had 12 straight games of having a negative WPA. It started out fantastically on July 19th, 1987, when he went one-third of an inning, allowing five runs on four hits and two walks. Hmm. 2 days later, he officially pitched zero innings after allowing a walk-off hit. The only other, like, super interesting game on here is... So there's not really that many interesting ones. There was one on... I should mention that the one that started that streak was ended up being a 20-3 loss.
Whoops.
There's another one-third inning. There's another zero innings. But he finally ended the streak on September 4th, 87, when he got a save after going four innings, allowing no hits, no walks, one strikeout.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
What were the other ones that were behind him close?
Well, tied for second on 10 is Steve Shields and Dale Murray. Both from the 80s. But some of the interesting names are Tanyan Sturts. In 2004, he had 8. There is 2012, Corey Wade. He had 7.
Oh, God. It was such a weird thing with Corey Wade, because he was one of those special Joe Girardi magic conjuring jobs where he somehow churned a good season out of him in 2011, and then in 2012, he turned back into a pumpkin. I would say he was almost the Cody Epley of 2011, I would say.
Yeah, that's about right. Jeff Nelson also had a streak of 7 in 96.
You mentioned Dale Murray, and he was a mop from the 80s. But the worst thing about him, so the Yankees traded with the Blue Jays to get him. They traded the first baseman, kind of far down their system. They already had Don Mattingly coming up pretty close to the majors, so they weren't really as concerned about it. But they traded away Fred McGriff.
Ouch.
To get this mop reliever who just didn't do anything.
Good work.
Yes, and this is why I care nothing for the "if the boss were alive" tweets or Facebook comments or PSA comments, because he would do terrible things. Just terrible.
Yeah, I don't understand where that comes from. It's just like this weird, different historical narrative that people have created where he somehow, like, gave birth to Derek Jeter.
Well, it's like how is the whole narrative around George Steinbrenner evolved when the Yankees started winning in the late 90s, you know, which was only enabled partially because, you know, he got suspended from baseball for investigating Dave Winfield or hiring a gambler to investigate Dave Winfield. And then he became this, like, oh, he just crazy old boss, you know, but we love him. And then everyone seems to forget that, like, he would regularly get booed whenever he got showed on the screen in, like, the late 80s and early 90s, and the Yankees are terrible because of all the finagling he did, but.
I think the idea is that, well, he wouldn't sit around and let it go the way it is. Yeah, you're right, he wouldn't. He would empty the farm for, like, Kurt Suzuki.
Like, oh, I think we need this Kurt Suzuki guy. I just wanted the pennant.
Got you another catcher.
Well, that was that's one of the funny things about that, you know, the whole Ken Phelps, Jay Buhner thing, because Ken Phelps is a DH that they didn't need because they already had a righty DH who could play first base in Jack Clark, and then so they just added this guy they didn't need, didn't end up going anywhere, and then they lost Jay Buhner. So Steinbrenner face.
So I was thinking about what you said, Matt, about the WPA stuff and how, like, who had the most negative. So I decided to do a little query on Play Index and find the past 10 years who actually had the lowest WPA, like, ever in an outing. And in the past 10 years, the lowest, and this was a negative 1.078, which I don't know how that's possible because it probably broke the system. I just want you to guess who you think of it is, because it wasn't while he was on the Yankees, but it was a Yankee. Like, he's
a
40.
I looked this up before, and I can't remember who it is.
It was in 2012. The game ended 14-13.
I think I remember hearing about this.
Was it Mitre?
No, I think Mitre was out of baseball by then.
Right.
Okay, it was Alfredo Aceves.
Oh, right.
Of course.
It was a Red Sox-Angels game. He pitched one inning. He allowed 5 runs on 6 hits, and two of those runs came from 2 home runs. He faced 10 batters. What else was it? I think it was just 2 home runs. Yeah, so it came out to a 45 ERA and a negative 1 WPA. And that was the worst win probability added in the past 10 years.
I think he's doing it right. And now he's suspended.
So, yep. Yeah, and there are, like, a few. There were 3 outings that had a higher than negative or lower than negative 1. Brandon Lyon in 2009. Todd Jones in 2007 and Jonathan Broxton in 2007. Weird that it can be actually greater than 1. Jim Johnson's up there too.
The since DFA Jim Johnson.
Yep. Jim Johnson, it was last season. He allowed in 2/3 of an inning, he allowed 4 runs. On 4 hits. He allowed 2 doubles and I guess 2 singles too. But yeah, that's pretty bad.
I guess what he must have done, he must have, like, been pitching, blew the lead, then the team came back, and then he blew the lead again or something.
No, I think it was in the, I think it was in the ninth inning.
Yeah. Well, if there's anything I know, it's that you can trust Jim Johnson the ninth inning.
Because saves.
Yep. Always good to see Tanyan Sturt's appearance.
And the last one was someone who came up on this list of smallest WPA. The most earned runs was Renelvis Hernandez.
gave up
10 earned runs. He was actually on in Houston.
Oh.
He gave up 10 runs in 4 innings, and he had a game score of -5.
That's how you do it. I remember he came up with the Royals. I guess he went to the Astros after, he roiled. It's funny you were talking about negative WPA. I remember you were talking about on the Effectively Wild podcast how Xander Bogaerts had, like, a weird streak of, like, 21 consecutive games in which he had a negative WPA, which is just odd, but kind of fluky, but still.
Yeah.
All right.
I see Dad one last name.
Go
with a streak of 6 in 1951 was Stubby Overmeyer.
Damn it, Stubby. Just can never trust Stubby Overmeyer. There are 3 Stubbies in Major League history, apparently. Stubby Clapp, Stubby Magner, and Stubby Overmeyer. What? Stubby Clapp pitched in 2001. How is that name still around? Oh, he's Canadian. That explains everything. I guess I shouldn't really talk because, we were just playing a series against a guy whose name is Rugnid, so... Rugnid Odor and his younger brother, Rugnid Odor, and his cousin and his uncle, Ruglis Odor.
Ruglis. That's the funniest name, Ruglis. Ruglis.
Yeah, exactly. It's Scooby-Doo. Okay. So, now we'll move on to the tweet bag. There's not too much in the tweet bag this week, but we've got a few questions. First question from Yankee Raven. If the Yankees still want to add a starting pitcher, any chance Tommy Malone is a possibility? Malone was floated as a trade possibility since he kind of demanded a trade from the A's because they demoted him since they have too many good starters. Hashtag Oakland A's problems. I wouldn't mind seeing Tommy Malone in the rotation at all, especially over Chase Whitley. I don't know if the Billy Bean is going to give the Yankees a good deal for him the way that Cashman has been able to hustle Kevin Towers and the questionable GM situation in San Diego.
Yeah, so the thing is
Omar
they're
Minaya
actually,
and crew.
I mean, depending, they're actually going to probably demand something for Tommy Malone. How much time does that, how many years of team control does he have left? Like, 4?
Something like that. I don't even think he's ARB eligible.
I think he's going to be ARB eligible after this year.
Yeah, he's a free agent after the 2017 season, so.
Yeah, so that's going to command something.
Right.
Because Tommy Malone isn't a bad pitcher.
No.
He's definitely not 2012 Tommy Malone.
No, but he's still pretty good.
Yeah, so his rest of season projection, 62 innings, 7 Ks per 9, 2 walks per 9, and a homer and a 1.14 home runs per 9, which could be ugly in Yankee Stadium, but he's a lefty.
Yeah.
So it probably won't be affected that much.
He makes it work despite a kind of limited repertoire.
Yeah, so that would put him for about 4.07 ERA, 3.98 FIP, which is kind of what you're getting from David Phelps. Hmm. So, how much would you give up for David Phelps?
I would probably call Malone a little bit better than David Phelps, but...
But I
see that's the thing. I would like to see Tommy Malone as the Yankee, but I just don't think it's going to happen with Billy Bean being the trading partner.
Yeah, because Billy Bean finds somebody that he's going to snag from the Yankees farm system and turn them into a shutdown closer or... He's gonna get someone like Jake Cave, and he's gonna like turn into a starting pitcher.
Or it'll be like something where Brandon Moss used to be like a good Red Sox prospect, and he floated around in the Pirates, and then they just signed him, and he turned into a ridiculous home run hitter.
Yeah, so something weird would happen with that, and I would, you know what I would almost do? I would almost see what the A's would offer, and then, or ask for, and then just don't give that away.
Like, yeah, okay, we'll take that idea. They're like, we'll take Cito Culver, and they're like, yeah, please, take him, and then they'll turn him into a closer.
So, but I mean, it's not a terrible idea. I do like Tommy Malone. I think he would, because the thing is they need someone like a number four starter to kind of get rid of Chase Whitley, because Chase Whitley's okay, but he's a reliever.
Yeah, and he's probably hitting an innings cap soon, because he's never started this much in a season before.
I mean, would rather want Chris Capuano starting for the Yankees.
Yeah. Chris Capuano. He's the big move that we should have been talking about. Why wasn't he the lead? I've let us down, I'm sorry. But
so, yeah, I wouldn't mind if they traded for someone of that similar quality, because they would get some kind of an incremental upgrade in the same vein as a Brian McCarthy type trade, where like they don't give up much and they get back something kind of modest.
Yep.
But the thing is Billy Beane's not going to get something
modest.
Modest in return.
All right, the next question from Sensor. Very broad question. What do you feel is the right path for the Yankees to go down? Develop the young talent like Severino, Judge, Refsnyder, or trade it away and go all in? I wouldn't want to go all in on this team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm one of those people that recognizes that you can't hug your prospects too much, and if the right trade comes up, then really, there are very, very few untouchables, but I don't know what trading away those big names is going to lead to in terms of like trade targets and good names, because I mean, they're not going to get David Price. Cliff Lee is not going to be worth it.
probably not even Ben Zobrist.
No. I don't think the Rays are going to want to trade within the division. The Rays could very well still be in it, for all we know. But
yeah,
the Yankees did try to get Samardzija, but obviously they just did not have as good prospects as the A's had to offer to the Cubs.
Yeah, they had Addison Russell. If they wanted Ben Zobrist, they would have to give up probably Severino, Judge, O'Brien, and somebody else.
Yeah. Maybe,
They'd have to clear out everybody. They would basically clean house.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to see them do that for this team. Maybe if the team was, doing really well and needed, an extra piece to go over the top, which is what the A's did with Samardzija. They had a really good team, and they wanted to supplement it. So that's why they felt comfortable getting rid of Addison Russell. But the Yankees are not in such a great spot right now. So.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of don't favor either route. I don't think they have to go all in. I don't think they have to develop the young talent completely.
Right, right.
Because I'll be honest, out of all those guys, maybe one of them will be okay.
Yeah, prospects are such a gamble. You don't know what you're going to get.
So,
I think Jason made a post the other day about Ben Badler had answered some questions about pitching prospects, and he said that even though Severino has done really well, he still doesn't consider him as good a pitching prospect as Phil Hughes and Jabba Chamberlain were during their prospect days. And,
yeah,
you know, look how they turned out.
Not that I mean, weird, I would be totally cool if Severino turned out like one of those, like Ian Kennedy or Phil Hughes. Mm. I don't think that's a failure.
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't want him to come, turn into 2013 Phil Hughes, that's for sure.
No, but if you think about his career as a whole,
yeah,
I think it's just considered a failure because of the expectations, but a failed prospect is a prospect that doesn't get to the majors, not a prospect who doesn't play to expectations.
Right. So.
So, I'd be totally cool if one of those players turned out to be a major league regular, but I think that probably only one of them will.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. So, next question from my personal favorite username here, from Orange Milk. Is there any other lefty reliever that the Yankees can trade for or promote besides Matt Thornton? Chris Capuano and Jeff Francis don't inspire much confidence, while Huff comes in when they're already losing or to provide length and extra innings. I think you already have your lefty in the bullpen in Matt Thornton, and I think Matt Thornton gets a bad rep because no one likes loogies. Because they're just expected to do their job, and whenever they don't do their job, it's really magnified. Someone made a comparison one time that it's like kickers in the NFL. Whenever they miss a big field goal, then it's like, oh, the kicker's terrible, get rid of him. And I feel like it's the same way with like a loogie and a Matt Thornton. Like when he does mess up, it's just like he's the worst thing, but he's really not that bad.
And the samples are so small that it's almost impossible to tell like a loogie's talent level just by watching them pitch.
Right.
Because if they have one bad inning, like one like disaster inning, that'll ruin their season line.
Well, it's like that one really bad inning Robertson had against the Twins has just made his ERA a lot higher than it should be.
Yeah, exactly. But like with a loogie, yep. It's like you let up one home run with like runners on base, like that's it. Like you are now considered a bad loogie.
Yep. Yeah, and so, Thornton's pitched to a 255, 333, 271 triple slash against lefties. And while that's more walks than I would like, actually it's only two walks. It's kind of, oh, he's hit three batters. That's weird. But it's a higher on-base percentage than I would like to see, but it's still fine to see from like a lefty specialist.
And it's small.
Yeah, and you don't need
small.
Yeah, and you don't need to really worry about, like, oh, we need a second lefty in the bullpen, because that's just, you don't really need that. So, I guess if you're going to go with someone in the minors, that's why you're looking at, like, a Lindgren type. I mean, Lindgren's far off, but they said that he could very well make his major league debut later this year if he progresses quickly. So, I guess he's a possibility, but I wouldn't hold my breath on it.
Yeah.
Other than that, I think you just have to roll with who's in your pen at the moment and trust that your pitchers are good enough to get out both righties and lefties. And that's one of the nice things about Warren, Kelly, Robertson, and Betances. They can get both batters out. So.
Yep.
Yep.
And to add one more thing on that, you know, the Yankees in the late 90s, 2000, and early 2000, or in the late 90s and early 2000s, their main lefty was basically just Mike Stanton. They didn't really have anyone else. They had, like, baby Randy Choate. He was, So, you don't really need to worry about having too many lefties. Thornton's fine.
Yep.
Okay. Next one, from EHNJ to HHSC. I'm just going to call him Eddie. So, from Eddie, draft picks. Is it too soon, but do you think the Yankee draft picks these last 2 years are an improvement over the previous years? It seems the players are moving up the chain more quickly. I would agree.
Yeah, they seem like it now.
Yes, I have.
The Yankees have had pretty good drafts in both 2014 and 2013. And I think it's just in such stark contrast to 2012 when, you know, Ty Hensley was the top pick and he's only just now starting to get consistent playing time because of all the injuries he had. And their second round pick, I think, was Austin Aune, who's terrible.
Yeah, I saw him play he's still playing in Staten Island and he is bad.
Yeah, he stunk up rookie ball for a couple years. And
Yeah,
out of like that whole 2012 draft class, the only players I see who could possibly become someone at this point, I think, are Ref Snyder, maybe Nick Goody, since he strikes out a lot of people and he's a reliever in the deep minors. Peter O'Brien, if he can ever figure out how to do more than just hit dingers, because he can't do anything else, really.
Yeah.
And I guess if you want to count Corey Black, even though he's on the Cubs now.
R.I.P.
The future. But you go before that in the 2011 draft, and you don't really see all that much either. There's, I mean, Dante Bichette was the top pick, and he's kind of eh. Greg Bird's so, in there. He was good. Jake Cave.
Yeah.
Mark Montgomery, if he ever can figure himself out. But to the point, if when you compare that to, like, the 2013 draft, there are a lot of interesting names in there. I mean, it helped that the Yankees had three first-round picks. That was a nice little perk. And that they got Jagielo, Judge, and Clarkin, who were all really good prospects. But then you also got some other interesting guys in there, like Michael O'Neill's not terrible. Murphy, John Michael Murphy is kind of an interesting guy. And you can look beyond that to the 2014 draft, and even though they just drafted all these guys, Lindgren got some pretty good reviews, and they expect him to rise to the system quickly. Austin Dekar is a really good prep arm. Mark Payton has been pretty terrific in his first month in the minor leagues. So I would say that there is a lot more hope from these recent few draft classes compared to the previous few.
Absolutely agree.
Yep.
So, yes, that is the answer. And the last question from the one and only Greg Kirkland. Which one of you is legit willing to kidnap Ref Snyder and bring him to the Yankees?
I love the Yankees, but I'm not committing a crime for them.
Well, you are already in Scranton, though, so you do have an advantage there.
Yep.
Yeah, but I don't want to get arrested for the Yankees.
Maybe you can enlist Quills to help surreptitiously. Maybe you can...
Okay, that could work.
Maybe we could dress Ref Snyder up as Quills, and then have him come to New York and, like, a meet the mascot type day. And then he's all of a sudden he's in the locker room. And then you convince Brian Roberts to put on the Quills suit. And then he goes back to Scranton, and that's where he finishes his career. As a mascot.
It's like herd Quills into the back of, like, a truck. Hey, where are you taking him? Nowhere. We'll be right back.
Has anyone seen Rob? No? And then the mascot guy runs in. He's like, someone stole my uniform.
A car chase with, like, Scooby-Doo music.
Okay. So, that's the tweet bag. Always look forward to hearing your tweet bag questions, so thank you for sending them in. Now we'll conclude the podcast, the Yankee and the Mitre of the Week. Matt F., your Yankee of the Week.
Brandon McCarthy.
Yes.
Since our last podcast, he's had two really, really good starts, and he's been a nice, like, breath of fresh air.
And they got him for Vidal Nuno.
Yes.
Oh, man. That'll never get old.
it's gonna be amusing forever.
Probably, yeah. Alright, Matt P., your Yankee of the Week.
Brett Gardner.
Yes.
For continuing to hit the baseball, to catch the baseball, to throw the baseball, and to run fast.
He does do all these things.
Yes, he does. And he's good at all of them.
Yep. He even hits home runs occasionally.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yep.
Been a nice little development this year.
Yeah. On a similar note, my Yankee of the Week is Jacoby Ellsbury, who's been also hitting really well. He's hit .435 with a .739 slugging percentage over the past week. He's got a couple homers. And, you know, he's also doing the great defense Brett Gardner thing.
Fangraphs has him as a .236 WRC plus in the past week.
Yeah, that doesn't suck, I think.
No, that's pretty good.
Going out on a limb here, I know, but
if he improves it, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, he could do that if he wanted.
It's not necessary, though.
Also had an honorable mention for David Robertson, who's thrown 5 scoreless innings in the past week. So,
woo!
Always good to see that. He is, I think he was just pissed at John Farrell for not taking him as an all-star. Which in hindsight is pretty silly. That John Hay wasn't taken for the all-star team, but whatever. Reliever all-star is going to reliever all-stars. Also, Sean Kelly in a limited sample size, but 15.4 K per nine in the past week.
Woo!
Yep. All right. All right. So, fortunately, the Yankees have been playing well, so there aren't too many negatives, but the Mitre of the week, Matt F., who is your Mitre of the week?
The man with a slash line of 056, 056, 056, Ichiro.
God.
Although, I don't think that includes today, because he did have a hit today, but...
Yeah, and he did get robbed by Leonis Martin on, like, what would have been his first extra base hit in, like, forever. But still, he is not good.
Yeah. He's still been bad.
Hashtag Ichiro for bench.
Ichiro for space.
All right, Matt P., your Mitre of the week.
Mine is Brian Roberts.
Fair.
For doing nothing.
Yep. And for being a general annoyance.
Just being a zero all around. Like, he's just all July.
Yep. And my Mitre of the week, I'm kind of disappointed enough to give this, but I'm going to have to give it to Shane Green because he was only okay on the mound in his last out in his last outing, and he made three errors.
Yeah.
And that was just, oh my god, he needs to have some serious pitcher fielding practice with Mike Messina, Ron Guidry, Jim. Like, listen, kid, you're not doing it right. I can't believe that one, the one ball that was just an easy comebacker, they just kind of walked over and just totally, like, softballed it way up over Kelly Johnson's head at first. Oh boy. We can't all be as good as the Saints, I suppose, but could be a little bit better than that. Alright. So, I think that'll do it for the Pinstripe Alley podcast, unless either of you have anything more?
No.
Okay. So, you can follow us on Twitter, at Pinstripe Alley. Follow the GIFs account at PSA_GIFs. There's a good post I put out today featuring weird GIFs from the rain delay, and that was very fun to put together, so I highly recommend checking that out if you get a chance.
That was the most fun rain delay.
Oh my
ever.
God, it was. It wasn't as fun for Matt P., who had to actually be there.
Yes, that was not as fun. I didn't get to see any of the actual fun.
You'll have the gifts. So you can follow me on Twitter at MernsPSA. You can follow Matt F. on Twitter at MattF15. You can follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter at MattProv94. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PinstripeAlley. Send in your tweet bag questions to @PinstripeAlley or just respond to the fan shot that I put up every time we record a podcast. And please rate and review us on iTunes. Always good to hear feedback, and really would like to hear how we're doing. So, even if it's just a couple-star review, let us know. If you think you need to add more baking recipes onto the show, might be a good... might spice it up a little bit.
Yeah.
So, hopefully the Yankees will have a good series against the Blue Jays coming up, and then take care of business again against Texas down in Arlington. So, from Matt Ferencik and Matt Provenzano, Andrew Mearns, thanks for listening. Have a good night.